The new standard in sports entertainment broadcasting. You're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea. On the Shining Wizards Wrestling Network, the new symbolized, what is it, the recognized symbol of excellence, right?
Something like that.
In sports entertainment broadcasting, this is the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, I am your gracious host, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Raya. I have a new co-host sitting in again for the third edition of his long tenure, hopefully, the Mega Powers.
The Mega Powers.
That's right. What's going on?
Just chilling. Well, I gave you a bounty full of gifts this time around.
Yeah, in exchange for me hooking up Dave with the technology he needs, he fulfilled my need to watch more wrestling. So Dave burned me a whole bunch.
This is the age of computer technology.
Yeah, well, we switched to Macs. I don't have anything Mac orientated. And of course, I decided to buy a $300,000 house after I bought all the Mac equipment. So that kind of took a step back to what's going on, but. Yeah. But I'm glad you got that all squared away. I'm learning as we go along in terms of technology. I can do the podcast. I can upload it.
you know more than me.
I got a logo. We're going to get business cards. This is my baby. And the thing is, if it wasn't for this, I wouldn't have met the Shining Wizards. I wouldn't have done Man Cave or Will and Phil or anything else that I've been involved with in the last 2 years. So when I got this idea to get a co-host, because I was lacking. I was like, I could talk for an hour and a half by myself, but your insight's been spot on. I enjoy your company. You're a cool dude, and I love the fact that I got a couple of years on you.
Yeah.
And you're still appreciative of what went on back in that era, and you have a good knowledge of it. So welcome to the fold. I appreciate your help.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you helping out. We're going to do big things. I have a lot of plans, and well, now the biggest plan was joining the network. I had approached the Wizards like last year after their anniversary show.
I didn't even know that they were doing something like this.
Well, it was like a thing where I wanted to do it. And The thing was, I wanted to do a live show. And the live shows are hard because everybody's schedule is different.
Yeah.
You know, and the other networks I'm involved in, they have like 40 other shows that all broadcast live. So it's like,
this is not a paying job. Folks.
It's not
a labor of love.
That's right. It's a labor of love. It's all coming out of my pocket. Now our pocket. It depends on how
everybody's pocket.
Right. So the Wizards have this new network, and I told the guys I was going to put you on as an official co-host when the network was up and running. I was one of the first people they approached, and I really appreciate that, and I want to thank them for it. And thanks guys, you guys are fantastic. Go to swn.shiningwizards.com, and let me tell you who's on the, besides us, the new symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting is the Shining Wizards Network. You're going to have Neckbreaker Podcast, which is a wrestling podcast of heavy metal music and pro wrestling. Your hosts, Brian and John, get shit-faced every 2 weeks. They've interviewed guys like Eric Bischoff, bands like Fit for an Autopsy, Power Glove, and so many other guys. They're a pretty good group of guys. I heard that thing with Bischoff was pretty spot on. So
I got to check that out.
Yeah, it's pretty. Neckbreaker Podcast is good. They do it every 2 weeks, sort of like what you and I do now. Trying to, anyway.
Yeah.
The Midnight Fury is Mike and Adam. They host the Midnight Fury? That was wrong. I mean, I'm reading this wrong. It's Midnight Jury, actually. I apologize, guys. You know what? I got like 17 windows open. I'm reading. Never mind. It's the Midnight Jury, a podcast that transports you back into the last old school generation. They debate in detail 80s and 90s pro wrestling, horror movies, and pop culture. So go to Midnight Fury, WLW Network.
Who's going
to
tackle the 60s and the 70s of wrestling?
We could. It's painstaking.
Yeah.
Most of it is, anyway. The early 70s, late 60s is pretty painstaking.
And when are we going to do a show on the kangaroos?
Yeah, or the Costellos.
Or the Zebra Kid.
The Zebra Kid. The Falling Angels are going to be a part of the Shining Wizards Network. They're not set up yet. We're going to have the 3.5 Wrestlers podcast up there.
Oh, really?
Which is, I believe, Pat Buck.
Kevin Matthews.
Kevin Ladders. Yeah, Kevin Ladders. And what's his face? Derek Tapout, right?
Yeah, why not?
What the hell's his name? I keep forgetting. It's the PWS guys. So it's PWS guys, three and a half wrestlers. And more importantly, just incredible. Pete Polacco is going to do Pro Wrestling 101. Wow. It's a video podcast, I guess you can call it. Yeah, Eddie's real stoked about that. This is Eddie's baby. He set this up. So, again, this is all fantastic news. We are part of the new network. It's going to be fantastic.
The new generation.
The new generation, yeah.
Of sports entertainment broadcasting.
Exactly.
Sports journalism.
Exactly. The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. They need to put that on the website.
Yeah.
Even though it's 17 words long. But.
Yeah. But anyway,
so you and I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. You were at the Legends of the Ring.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was a bit boring because we had to, like, wait forever for the guys that we wanted to see. Me and my friend Kevin, we were specifically there just, for of course, Stan Hansen, who really didn't say too much. He just kind of, like, seemed like it was just a guy sitting in a chair that looked like Stan Hansen. You shook his hand and he autographed your stuff and that was it. But regardless, it was still, awe-inspiring to see the man up close and personal. Some other highlights was getting to see Colonel Robert Parker.
Who didn't age. I saw that picture.
Yeah, he looks the same.
That's amazing.
And my friend was very reluctant to do his Colonel Parker impersonation, but we forced it out of him. But unfortunately, Colonel Parker did not reciprocate with his own impersonation of himself. But it was still awesome. You know, it was good to at least hear somebody going well.
Star.
But who else? Ron Simmons. Got him to autograph some of my old WCW comic books.
I saw the pictures. That's fantastic.
He was a blast. Like he was having fun, just fucking chilling out.
Probably the first time he's seen those books in like 20 years.
Yeah, he said that he has some of them at his house, but
yeah, like 20 years ago.
Yeah,
you know.
But
matter of fact, 20 years ago this year, I think he won the championship. Right, 93, he was the first black heavyweight champion, right?
Yeah, it had to be 93 because
he went to ECW. Hogan. Yeah, he went to ECW. Hogan didn't sign until June.
94.
June of 94. I remember the big parade, but. You remember, didn't remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
They had the parade in Disney and all that. They were parading down there with Jimmy Hart and the Corvette.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was because he was in ECW, Ron Simmons was talking about.
Yeah.
The ECW didn't come into New York television until, I want to say, winter of 94. I believe. So they were showing the Ron Simmons clips then of him and Shane Douglas.
Because I was seeing it in Jersey. I think, I want to say 93, but
you guys got it way before us.
Yeah, because it was still like local access. Like, you had to be lucky to run into something like that. For me, I just happened to be switching through the channels and, you know, I saw Scotty Flamingo.
Yeah.
Or Johnny Polo. I'm
like, 94.
What's this guy doing on, you know, TV, you know, dressed up like a fucking grunge dude, for lack of a better term. And from there, it was history.
I've been to a couple of wrestling conventions. I've never been to the Legends, and I think us as a team might want to consider going back to the one in October.
Mm-hmm.
Only because by that time, we should be a little more established and...
Because there were other podcasters, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
just
I think
like a little bit, but they were there.
You know, just to grab a couple of guys and talk to them. And, you know, because you know what? Some of these guys don't have anything else but this.
Yeah.
So we're lucky because this is what we talk about. So, I mean, again, I'd like to do something like that. I've never been to a Legends one at all. I've been to a shit ton of them when I was a kid. And they were all in some Jersey hotel.
Yeah, you know. This was at, I don't know, like the Ramada Inn or something like that.
Yeah, and, yeah, yeah.
It was a blast. Like, I'm not a big fan of going to anything wrestling related anymore these days. I just enjoy watching it in my house, but because of course some of the fans there are a bit.
Which is why I like the Legends thing, because you get the guys, the older fans, the smarter fans, which I want to get into that in a couple of minutes, too.
Yeah, because I remember when I went to see Stan Hansen, there wasn't really people bringing up any, like, his Japanese stuff. There were dudes bringing up magazines from, like, the 70s, you know, his WWF days, and so, yeah.
Which wasn't that long of a run, which we talked about. And we got a lot of feedback on the Stan Hansen thing. You did a bang-up job, by the way. That was fantastic. My buddy Mike Shane actually shouted out to us on the Facebook page. He wanted to, well, what about Bruiser Brody? What about? I said, easy. I said, as we speak, we're working on it.
Yeah, pal, you'll get your Bruiser
Brody. Get your Bruiser Brody. He actually just had a birthday this week. Bruiser Brody would have been 67 years old. And like I said, he still would have been kicking people's faces in, too. So
there's no doubt about that.
So speaking of smart wrestling fans, I want to read this article to you. It's quick. It was taken from a Australian Sports Entertainment back in 2004.
Okay.
Apparently, Ric Flair was on tour there. You mentioned
possibly the Hulkamania.
The Hulkamania tour.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys go. They do these. And as a matter of fact, Flair had just put his book out.
Okay.
At that point. So this was his.
Oh, wait, no. If it was 2004, no, that couldn't have been.
It wasn't the Hulkamania tour.
No, that Hulkamania tour was like, what, that was like 3 or 4 years ago, something like that?
I don't remember.
So this was definitely WWE.
Yeah, I don't remember the tour. I remember the tour. I don't remember the time.
Yeah.
But this was him in Australia, and it came across my computer, I want to say Tuesday or Wednesday, and the real reason why I even gave it attention, because, you know, it talks about the smarks, and if you don't know what the term smark is it smart wrestling fan, smart, a mark. I hate that word. We all use it. I think it's not used in proper context.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, because, I mean, I could sit here and say I'm probably one of the smartest wrestling fans that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I could probably say the same about you up to a certain time in wrestling history, you know. What bothers me the most is that he takes offense to this. He takes offense to this. So let me just read this. He says, and I quote, "Fans who use the terms like face and heel, I have no respect for because they are not wrestlers. I do not like outsiders using inside talk. I have no respect for it whatsoever." That's where I just became unglued. I was two sentences in and I was like unglued. "Everybody wants to think that they're a wrestler. The guy who wrote my book for the first time, I'd go on record and saying is a fucking idiot. It had to be rewritten. He took everything I said and wrote it like he was on the inside. He will go down in history, and I will make sure he does, as the biggest idiot ever to be given an opportunity and completely fuck it up because he talked like he was on the inside." You know, fans want to talk to us using our terminology,
yeah.
And it's not of our guys' fault because they want to talk to the fans and get their opinions. They want to talk to them like they're on the inside. I do have a lot of respect for the fans, but I don't like the fans who think they can talk like they're on the inside because they're not. We've got too many guys in our business that rely on the opinion of some fan who thinks he's smart. It's a real issue for me. He has a lot more issues than that. But we'll get into that in a second.
Yeah.
"We have a lot of people who think that the end result of what we do lives and breathes on what the internet thinks is right. I mean, that would be like me trying to write an article on Mercedes-Benz. Do I like Four Doors? Yeah. Do I really know anything about it? No. I wouldn't know anything about the design of a Mercedes from the inside. I could use terminology, but I wouldn't know anything about it. Or it would be like a doctor going home and getting medical advice from random people who have posted something on the net. You know, our guys are the worst for it. They tell the fans what's going to happen. Some of the wrestlers are marks. You know, they're catering for the guys on the internet. Please say I'm good. Say something good about me. I'll tell you anything you want to know. They have fans that will cater to just to say you're great." Then he goes on to say that was why it was so successful in the past and why we had riots in stadiums, because people didn't know. Now we have guys telling the fans what's happening the week before and they're like, "Don't tell anybody I told you. Just say that I'm really good," and then laugh. In quotes, he's laughing. It's a shame. It kills me. And if the fans are honest with themselves, they wouldn't want to know either. It used to be riotous. People would be so wound up. They couldn't punch it on the internet and find out what's going on. And this is credit to Matt from Australian Sports Entertainment in 2004. Now, I like how he puts it, like, our terminology.
Yeah.
That's not their terminology. It's the terminology of the promoter, mm-hmm. of the fan, the evolution of the sport of professional wrestling.
It's kind of like going to a different country and hearing people speak English and saying, "You're speaking our language," you know?
I read that and I wanted your opinion. What do you think of his remarks?
Well, as a wrestler, you know, I respect all the work that he's done, but, you know, as a human being, I can't respect a man who's cheated on his wife God knows how many times, got arrested for, what was the car incident that he had a few years back, you know, put himself into so much, like, debt. In that respect, I can't respect him on that level. But as far as, you know, using wrestling terminology, come on, give me a break. You know, words are words. You know, I could slap a few words together and say that they're my words and, you know, say, "Hey, you can't, you know, use this word. It's mine." But it's all, how can I word it? It's just, you know, fabricated stuff. You could throw any kind of terminology to it. You know, people in film have their own terminology. And, you know, whether you're a fan or not, you know, it's a free-for-all if you want to talk that way. As far as, you know, having fans smart to the whole product in a sense of, you know, not giving away things and, you know, getting that feeling again. It is what it is now. You know, whether we could go back in time and change that, you know, that's not happening. But, you know, I what's done is done.
This is the same guy who just lost his 20-something-year-old son to an overdose of drugs.
Yeah.
Who was a professional wrestler also. This is the same guy who's had 4 different wives. This is the same guy who had his dead son's eulogy,
mm-hmm.
mind you, thanked the policeman, the local policeman in the area where they lived, thanking them for bailing his son out X amount of times.
Wow.
Because of who their dad was. I'm going to go on record right now and tell you that I'm probably one of the biggest Ric Flair fans on the planet.
Same right here.
Okay, I wear his shirt weekly to work. I own a lot of his stuff. I read his books. I think from 1983 to 1989, there was probably nobody better in the business technically than the Nature Boy Ric Flair. From 83 to 89, you tell me, and somebody mentioned on another podcast recently that you can grade a champion by remembering his matches. You know, guys now who with these holding a title every 3 months mm-hmm. or whatever it is, and we'll CM Punk being the exception, obviously.
Yeah.
But like guys didn't, you know, guys back then held the belt longer, and you remembered the feuds. There was build-ups and stuff like that. And I remember the Flair and Piper, Flair Valentine, Flair Steamboat, Flair Sting, Flair Luger, you know, Flair Muda, Flair Funk. I could tell
Flair
you.
Flair everybody.
Flair everybody, you know. But this is me being 39 years old in 2 months and telling you that I can. But this bothers me. And I took offense because I'm not one of these keyboard warriors that sit behind a computer and poke and on message boards and I, you know, trash talk and there's no need for it. You know, the newer wrestling fan, I think, is like a dumbed down drink or a watered down drink. You know, you go to a club and you pay $12 for a friggin' martini that you know
you can go to the liquor store and make yourself for
$2.
Yeah.
Or for the exactly. You know what I'm saying? That's what and I hate the shit on newer fans. And please don't take this as disrespect for the newer fans that listen to the podcast, but you have to understand something. The older wrestling fan is not only a smarter wrestling fan, but it's a different era. Different time. Things were done differently. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have dirt sheets. This was before the hotlines.
Yeah.
This was before the Meltzer newsletter, you know,
yeah.
The Observer. This is before. This is you knew somebody who worked in who worked the ticket stands, or your friend knew somebody who worked the camera in Titan, or you knew somebody who worked down in Georgia who drove the truck, who drove the ring from territory to territory. That's how you got your rumors. Oh, yeah. My cousin works for Titan Sports, or my brother-in-law works for the magazine guy down on 8th Avenue, and blah blah blah. And that's what the sad part about it is that it's shit like this that, like, I have no respect for the fans. Why? The fans made you.
Yeah.
The fans made you, dude. You weren't even supposed to walk after a certain part of your career. You broke your back.
And the fans just want to, like, if they want to use terms like, you know, mark or face, who cares?
Yeah.
It's not the end of the world. Like, because first of all, when did it really break down where, like, wrestling was, you know, totally fake? It was, you know, pre-planned. What was that, like, the 90s with the whole McMahon? Controversy with the steroids, like that broke it all out there. It even got to a point where I remember it was at WrestleMania 10. That was probably the last, like, big WrestleMania that I enjoyed.
94.
Yeah, 94. And you could pick up the newspaper, and it would have, like, results of, like, what the show was going to be, you know, the coming night, because everything was pre-taped. They would talk about the whole Luger thing where, whoops, it, he was, gave away that he was going to be the champion.
Right. I don't know.
In a bar during the day.
You're a Jersey guy, right?
Yeah.
You grew up in Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I know in New York we had the Daily News, and we had the little column called The Slammer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a black and white, a guy in a mask. He wore, like, a potato sack over his face. And he was called The Slammer, and he would give you inside information.
Yeah.
Quote unquote. And if you wanted more information, call 1-900, blah, 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 whatever. Okay. That was the one guy. And then when Raw jumped off in 93, was it? When was Raw? 90?
Yeah, Raw was 93.
I was at the first show.
That was WrestleMania 9.
Yeah, it was the Manhattan Center.
Yeah.
I was there. And, you know, I remember going to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania that year for a 5-hour taping. Of Raw. They would show 3-4 episodes. So I saw the Heartbreak Hotel 4 times with Shawn Michaels. I saw Diesel fight The Undertaker twice. Same match. Different tapings.
Hmm.
That was when you got a sense of the fans watering it down. The internet watered wrestling down.
Oh yeah, without a doubt.
Because right now, as we speak, we can pull up something, whether it's fake or false, I shouldn't say fake, false or not. You know, the news aspect of it anyway.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty much the shtick of it. I just think that it was just in bad taste for Ric Flair to say that.
Yeah, and this has been something that's been going on for over 20 years now. So, really?
Yeah.
Even though this is dated news itself, still. You know, I know he's from a different era and so, but... he's got his own flaws, so really, for him to really get down on the fans like that.
In this day and age, if you're going to go on public record anywhere in the world.
Anywhere.
And talk about what you do or about the people that are involved in your business, whether it's the fans, the promoters, the other wrestlers. If you're going to do it in this day and age and put validity to it,
mm-hmm.
I think personally, you might want to think about what you're going to say first. Only because it's shit like this that, you know, it's, you know, your life is out there. TMZ is all over you now. The internet's all over you. All these writers are all over you. They care about what happened. Nobody cared about wrestling 20 years ago, except for you and I.
Yeah.
Okay? The fans. Now, everybody cares about it. Because some of these guys and girls act out.
Yeah.
And they say in my old neighborhood, they act a fool. You know?
Yeah, and it's... any little thing, you know, whether it's getting pulled over for a DUI or something like that, it's all out there. Buck Zumoff's 12 sexual assaults.
Rock and roll Buck Zumoff. Can you believe
that? Taking a look at him, I can believe it.
Yeah, you look at him now, he looks like a dirty old man.
Yeah.
But in 1985, when he's walking out there with a boombox and leopard skin pants, it's like, you didn't know. You were a kid. I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
You know? It's... sad, dude. It's sad that it comes to that. But you know what? Guys like Kurt Angle, who arguably one of the best technical wrestlers in the world, gets no respect because he goes on Twitter and he goes on these drunken or drug-induced rants about anything.
Yeah.
The Briscoe, who did the whole thing about when Delaware passed the whole gay marriage thing. And, you know, dude, that's another thing. It's like, whatever your sexual preference is, it's like, you're in a public eye.
Yeah.
Handle it. If you're not for it, handle it. There's certain things you don't have to talk about in the public.
Yeah.
I don't discuss politics or religion with people at all. At all. And sexual preference is going to be a close third.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it has any bearing on what else is going on unless you're talking about it in length.
Yeah.
If you're in a mixed crowd or you're on Twitter and you have thousands of followers, wrestling fans, the marks, you know, you don't want to do shit like that. So, Ric Flair, to you, I give a big middle finger to. And why don't you clean yourself up? Stop trying to wrestle. You're 60-something years old. Accept your role as a legend in this sport. Accept your role as one of the greatest of all time, in my book anyway. In your book, I know that. Yeah. You're a big Ric Flair guy. And speaking of Ric Flair, we have a wonderful podcast for you today, wonderful episode. When Dave was here the last time, I was cleaning out my basement trying to find him some computer parts to bring back to his
To
the power plant, yeah. We have the Decker Dome, we have the power plant. So now that the power plant's up and running, as I was doing that, I found a highspots.com videotape.
Oh, wow.
That used to be $20, now it's probably $4 if you look for it now.
Oh, God, I actually gave a bunch of those to Eddie for free.
Right. So I kept them in storage, I have them now, and I found the Crockett Cup. The second annual Jim Crockett Senior Memorial Tag Team Tournament.
The second of third.
The second, yeah.
Three of them.
There's three of them. 86, 87, and 88. I did get footage from 88. I saw a little bit of 86, but I have 87 in full. You actually pulled up raw footage on the internet.
Yeah.
From the George Michael Sports Machine.
Yeah.
Which was a sports show on the weekends on NBC back in the day. George Michael was one of the first sports casters next
not
to
not the guy from Wham.
No, not George, no.
Okay.
Exactly. George Michael was one of the first guys that openly loved wrestling, which played on his show, and you looked for it. I was a latchkey kid. I was home a lot on the weekends. My mom had a weekend job, and waiting for Saturday Night's Main Event to come on, or waiting for Saturday Night Live to come on a Saturday night, you got the George Michael Sports Machine. And he would show, well, taken out of the Boston Garden where Tito Santana was just upset by
the Macho Man.
And he would show it in length. He would show it in length. And you would be like, wow. Like, he was a real sports cast. He would show it like, oh, my God, this is insane.
Yeah.
And
breaking news.
To me, it was breaking news. I was 1985. I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
So this is cool. So I pulled the footage out, and I told Dave, we have to do this. So you finally got to see all of it, right?
Yeah. I watched it a few days ago.
So, all right.
And this brings me back, because this is one of my favorite tapes from, we got an interruption here.
No, we're fine.
Oh, okay. We're good.
Yeah. Have the nose.
But it was one of my favorite tapes from back in the going to Baltic Video, Palmer Video, Blockbuster Video, what have you. And for me, growing up, you know, as a kid, I was, you know, strictly WWF guy. But occasionally I would see the NWA stuff. You know, I heard about WCW, I heard about NWA, like we talked about through the magazines last episode. But, you know, I never really got to see a lot of that stuff in length, especially like the big shows.
Right.
So this was one of the this is one of the big shows that popped up, and of course, you know, Road Warriors a part of it. Legion of Doom, to me at the time. So, Dusty Rhodes was part of it. So, you know, I had to get my hands on this. And at first, I was very reluctant to watch some NWA, you know, WCW stuff. But once I finally got into it, I was like, wow, this is the real deal.
Yeah.
This is not like WWF.
See, my video store didn't have any of that stuff. The only NWA video I've gotten on a rental is Ringmasters.
Okay.
You remember the Ringmasters tape,
right? Those are the PWI tapes, right?
Right. And
I've never seen any of those, but I've seen them.
I have one that I should try to convert just for nostalgia reasons, you know? But that was the only NWA that we got. I didn't get any of this, like I told you in the last episode.
Uh-huh.
I got, like, from the UHF channels. All my stuff from the NWA was, like, 3 months prior. So I wow. had, like, this thing where you play catch-up.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, give me 1 second here. Yeah, but it was, like, a thing where I, all this stuff was, like, this came out in April. I didn't see it until, like, June or July.
Okay.
You know? So, until I obviously later on in life where I got the videos and stuff.
Yeah,
like
that was another thing about videos. Like, whenever, you know, like a SummerSlam or a Halloween Havoc came out, like, you would have to wait like a good 3 to 6 months for something to come around, whether it was to buy it or to rent it at the video store.
It was always fun to rent those videos.
Yeah.
Especially the Coliseum videos, which you just gave me the British Bulldogs one, which was fantastic, but we'll get into
it. Oh, there's more than that on that.
That's fantastic.
On the DVD set.
That's
yeah.
fantastic. So, this is the Crockett Cup. Again, the second of three. This was a particularly good one. It was good for a couple of reasons. It was good because it probably had... it was two nights in Baltimore. Now, the Baltimore Arena, actually I just saw it last April. For the first time up close.
Really?
Yeah, I was in there for a conference for my job.
Wow.
And we drove by the old Baltimore Arena, and I was like, in the Inner Harbor in Maryland, and I was like, man, this is was. And I had two guys, my boss and one of my coworkers, and I'm like, this was a hotbed for pro wrestling for like 25 years. And you're like, who cares? I'm like, no, dude, you do care. Because when I think of Baltimore, I think of the Bash,
mm-hmm.
and I think of the Bash with Luger and Flair.
Yeah.
Which was, I think, the next year.
That was 90, right?
88. With the torture rack, and there was so much blood they had to stop the match, and we all thought Luke was winning the belt. Oh, my God, like, Jim Ross is going crazy. There has to be another podcast we could do, but...
Yeah.
When I think of Baltimore, I think automatically the Great American Bash. I actually think WWE, when they brought the Bash back, they had one of their matches.
The first one
yeah.
was there?
I believe so. Don't hold me to it. I would have yeah. to look. But... That's nostalgia.
Yeah.
You know, and they all you would have is like two or three, sometimes you'd even have like between one and three matches, and then it would be just a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Bunkhouse Stampede tournament, and then there was this. This was the kayfabe $1 million tournament.
Oh, yeah.
So, what have you, watching it, did you catch any? No, we'll get into the match. We'll go get into the matches
okay.
that were on the video. But
uh-huh.
did you see the non tournament matches? Did you see the Big Bubba?
Yeah, the steel cage match and Ric Flair versus Barry Windham for the World Heavyweight Title.
Which again, fantastic. The Big Bubba match, which we'll get into,
I don't recall how that feud began.
I don't either. I know for a fact that Bubba's main thing was he was Cornette's guy.
Yeah.
So, all right. And I think at this point, I know Ole was still in the Horsemen, so...
Yeah, because they were still, as far as I could tell, they were heels. Especially
right.
with Wyndham going against Flair for the World Heavyweight title.
Right. So this was... My copy was straight from the video.
Yeah.
From Crockett. So the first match was the Barbarian and Bill Dundee from Memphis.
What a team that is.
Fighting Tim Horner and a returning Mike Rotundo. Mike had just did a stint in WWF.
And actually on the Raw footage
George Michael Sports
from
Machine.
From the George Michael Sports Machine. They actually asked him about the WWF on the Raw footage, which we'll put up on Facebook and all that.
Yes, we will.
But he asked him, like, you know, about why he jumped over to the NWA, which I found, interesting, because especially during that time, WCW, NWA, they were known for occasionally mentioning the WWF, but for the most part, they wouldn't bring it up if it wasn't necessary. And this time around, it was just kind of like thrown out there right to Rotunda, like, you know, what made you decide to go to the NWA? And of course, you get the biggest load of kayfabe bullshit,
right?
Possible.
I just want the opportunity to work with some of the best wrestlers in the world, and
the competition is better.
The competition here is so much better. I'm And this was the, you get the same speech from any wrestler.
Yeah.
It was the same speech, and it was hysterical. And you caught on, like, all right, whatever.
And even when they would do that, like, on the broadcast, like, they wouldn't, like, say they wouldn't even mention, you know, WWF or wherever they were coming from, like, or even Japan. They would say, like, oh, you're returning from Japan. Like, what brings you back? It's like, oh, the competition can't get any better. Then they would drop down, to, like, the list of names and all the champions and all that kind of stuff. But you knew it was just a paycheck.
So they, so Bob Berrien, part of the Powers of Pain. Bill Dundee was a main player in Memphis with Jerry Lawler. Bill Dundee, the father of Jamie Dundee from PG-13, mm-hmm. and Nation of Domination, obviously.
Yeah.
They beat Tim Horner. Tim Horner was a Mid-South journeyman. He was like the, I guess, the equivalent to Jose Luis Rivera of WWF, yeah. you know.
Well, I think he had a little bit more...
Yeah, he was Lightning Tim Horner.
Yeah, like there was like a little bit of buzz about him.
Yeah, the NWA had a light heavyweight title.
Yeah.
I know he was part of that scene for like a little while, and then he just faded out into a job guy. Yeah. Preliminary guy, as you call him.
I found this interesting, especially with this tape, concerning this tournament. And this brought back a lot of memories for me, good and bad. But with tag team endings, especially at this time, and, you know, even going back to what we were talking about, like, you know, you really didn't get a lot of this footage. You didn't get to see it all the time. So a lot of these endings, you didn't get to see, you know, half the time. So, like, now with YouTube and, you know, even, like, the VHS tapes, like, becoming more, available, you know, in the late 80s and 90s, you got to see some of the same endings over and over and over again. And one of the things that brought me back watching this tournament was like seeing every possible tag team bullshit ending on one tape. And this like started it off with, what was it? Tim Horner had a Barbarian sleeper hold.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Rotunda's distracting the referee or trying to, you know, get the referee's attention about what's going on, and Dundee just punches him in the back of the head. There could have been, you know, a foreign object, but punched the head, and he was out. And Barbarian and Bill Dundee moved on.
And when you look at the brackets, like I saw the brackets on Wikipedia, you look at some of these teams, you're like, this was just teams that were like guys were thrown together.
Yeah.
Case in point, the next match, which was Shaska Watley, you know him better as Pistol Pez Watley,
yeah.
and he teamed up with Al Blake, better known as Tahio Khan, which, again, these are two guys that were, well, Pez Watley was a territory guy. He went from Mid-South to, you know, NWA.
Yeah, he was involved with Macho Man and the Memphis, you know,
Texas. Territory. He did some stuff with Devon Erickson, and all that, you know. With Brickhouse Brown, all those guys too, and then they had a team of wow. It was the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, and Laser Tron,
aka
Hector Guerrero, which a lot of guys don't know.
No, this was the gobbledygooker people,
right? No, dude. This was I didn't know that Hector Guerrero was Laser Tron until. When did the WrestleCrack... Remember the WrestleCrack books?
Oh, yeah.
This was what, the late 90s, early 2000s, maybe? I had gotten...
Yeah, it had to be late 90s, early 2000s, because I remember, like, being on that website all the time.
Well, this is before I even had, like, a steady connection.
Oh, wow.
I had the dial-up when I had went to a friend's house.
So my
My sister had gotten me the book.
Uh-huh.
And he was in the book, and I'm like, really? Like, that's Lasertron. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I couldn't believe... The Guerreros, like, are world-renowned, man.
Yeah.
Hector, Mondo, Eddie, Chavo Classic,
but
you know?
Hector always seemed to get the shit end of the stick as far as the Guerreros are gone.
Yeah, I guess.
As far as just some, like, ridiculous-ass gimmicks, because, frankly, it doesn't really matter what you're under. You know, you're getting your paycheck, you're doing what you're doing.
Right.
You know, whether you got the belt or not. Well, I think at the time, wasn't he the world light heavyweight champion for the NWA?
After he was just, he was Lasertron after that, yeah.
No, while he was Lasertron.
While he was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, but that he was in that Tim Horner stage. It wasn't like a thing where. See, the NWA had, they had the light heavyweight championship. They had the Western States. They had the Texas.
Heritage national title.
Right, and all these belts were, you know, defended regionally. This was when the NWA still sanctioned the territories.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, this was the tail end of that.
Because
the only belt that was relevant besides the U.S. and the world was the television title.
Yeah.
They didn't mention the light heavyweight belt anymore, nor the Western States. I know Barry Windham had it before, like, Barry Windham and Larry Zbysko and I think Mike Rotundo and Rick Steiner when they were with the Varsity Club, which is right after this, was the last time all those guys were involved with those two belts. I know the TV belt got a little bigger when Sting became more relevant. They brought the Great Muta in, and Arn Anderson was TV champion for a while.
Yeah, you know? He had some A-plus workers, you know, defending that belt, giving it some notoriety.
Politically, these belts were put in place. Because let's be honest, half the guys that could really work didn't get belts.
Yeah.
The Rick Rudes of the world, the Manny Fernandezes of the world. I mean, a tag team wrestlers, they got notoriety.
Yeah.
But guys like that didn't get belts, right? You know, guys like Arn Anderson should have been world. I mean, if you look at Arn Anderson's career, he could have easily been a U.S. champion or an intercontinental champion, you know? Yeah. But again, politically, that never happened, so these belts are in place. Another podcast, another time, right? Yeah. Second round action.
Oh, we didn't get to the winner of the match.
I'm sorry, did I skip that? No, I did Pistol Pez and Khan defeated Lasertron and Lasertron. I'm sorry, I keep saying Hector Guerrero.
Yeah, Lasertron dumped Shasko over the top rope for the DQ.
Now, you know the rule. That rule was implemented for such a long time.
Yeah.
That when we were kids, I get confused. I'm like, how come this doesn't happen on a Saturday morning show, you know?
Yeah. WWF didn't touch that.
Guys get thrown over the top all the time,
you
know?
It was just like a common thing.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So he gets DQ'd.
That even went into WCW until like late 90s.
They stopped when Bill Watts was the head guy. When Bill Watts took over, that rule was out the window. So whenever Bill Watts...
with Bill Watts, it was... you couldn't... The top rope DQ was still in effect, but you couldn't use the top rope like to do like a flying dropkick or anything like that.
Right. And then right when he was in, they stopped it totally. I should say he stopped it. I'm saying That's when it was going away, and during his tenure, he made the rule up when you can only do this, and this.
No, because I remember them doing it as late as the Hogan
94.
Yeah,
I don't remember that. Well, you could be right. Whatever it is, what it is.
Because what was that? I was watching the friend let me borrow the Clash of the Champions Blu-ray.
I have it. You should. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. And I remember there was like some like recent matches. I think like Pillman and Guerrero when they were talking about like the top rope rule. I'm like, oh wow, they're still doing it.
I forgot. I gotta refresh, and this is a good way to do that. All right, so the next match on the card was the Armstrongs, a very young Brad Armstrong teaming up with Dad, Big Papa, Bullet Bob.
Mm.
Bob looks against the Russians.
Yeah.
Which was Ivan Koloff and Vladimir Petrov.
Yeah.
Now, Petrov was...
He was the replacement for Nikita.
Nikita, who went babyface and became the Superpowers.
Yeah.
With Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
And Petrov, another guy, was a journeyman. Made him in. Of course, Crusher Khrushchev was with them for a while, which was...
Barry Darso,
who became Smash from Demolition. So now you had to replace him also.
He did not have a Russian accent at all.
Not at all. From Minnesota. Neither did Vladimir Petrov.
Well, you know, Minnesota is known for their communist community. So
they are. That Vern Gagne camp, man. That Vern Gagne camp was a killer. But as old looking as Bob Armstrong was, he could still go.
He was old back then, and now he still wrestles, and he's like...
106, right?
And for some reason, he wears a mask. I don't know why. I guess it's because of how ugly he
He's got that awful Killer Bees mask. Remember when the Killer Bees wore those awful, god-awful yellow and black masks?
Yeah.
The only guy who could pull off a yellow and black mask was Dusty Rhodes when he was the yellow dog.
Yeah. But I never understood why the Killer Bees wore the mask, because I know they turned... Well, I know they turned heel for a brief time, but they were doing it while they were faces, too. But I don't know, that's... Again, we're digging up, like, millions of things.
Yeah, I know. We're getting off course here.
A Killer Bees podcast. Tune in next week.
No, well, no. We could do a Killer Bees podcast, but not for the anniversary show. Can't do it. All right, so the Armstrongs win by DQ when Uncle Ivan rocks the big chain. And
again, a sleeper hold into a foreign object.
How many sleeper hold foreign object finishes are on this tape? At least three?
Possibly, but, you know, the tape doesn't cover the whole tournament, so...
No, look at some of the participants in this tournament, dude.
There's, like, 16 teams, right?
You had Giant Baba and Takagi. I didn't know who Takagi was. He was Arashi. He was a former sumo wrestler in All Japan in war. He had the Arashi driver, which was an over-the-shoulder reverse pile driver. I wish I would have saw that.
Yeah.
We got to get some War in All Japan tapes with Arashi in them. Blanchard and Luger in this. The Garvins, Manny Fernandez and Rick Rude. Rock
the Mulkeys.
The Mulkeys are in this. Bill and Randy. The Road Warriors. Mania. Al Blake was Petrov, not Takeo Khan. I forget what Takeo Khan was. Wahoo McDaniel and Baron Von Raschke. You know, and the Thunderfoots, 1 and 2. Alan Anderson and Kevin Sullivan also.
I think the Mulkeys have their one win over the Thunderfoots.
Right. So, yeah. So, another A foreign object sleeper hole finish.
Yeah, probably.
Right. Another good match from the second round. My favorite match. One of my favorite matches. My favorite teams of all time would have been Midnight Express.
Really?
Yeah. You know what? I think at the time when Stan Lee replaced Dennis Condrey, taking nothing away from him, Dennis Condrey's a good worker. I think Bobby Eaton found a guy that wasn't... Because Dennis Condrey was like an older version of Bobby Eaton. Same style. Stan Lee, quicker, good with the feet.
Had the karate background.
Yeah, he was a good-looking dude. Like, the girls liked him, you know. And I think that they were my favorite tag teams of all time.
They had more personality.
He did. He did. And they fought the Garvins, Jimmy and Ronnie Garvin, who were not brothers. They were father and stepfather.
Wow.
Pretty creepy, right?
Yeah.
Jimmy Garvin was old at this point. Because Jimmy Garvin's pushing like 70. Ronnie Garvin, I should say. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Ronnie Garvin is old. He's like in his late 60s now.
The Hands of Stone.
The Hands of Stone, the Garvin Stomp, former NWA Heavyweight Champion, who won the belt this year, actually, later on in the year. He beat Ric Flair in the cage.
Is that at Starrcade?
Starrcade 87, yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Which would another podcast we can do.
Oh, my God.
Starrcade. But anyway.
Knowledge.
We're going to have to break out the books, Dave. We have looking at this, the result sheet that we have in front of us. There's so many good stuff that came out around this time. You know, Midnight Express defeated the Garvins. Cornette rocking that pink suit jacket. Did you see that?
Yeah,
with the pink shoes.
You know, Cornette was the predecessor for a lot of amazing suits that would come down the road. I'm pretty sure that would not be used for a tuxedo match, though.
No. Jim Cornette, at the time, fantastic character.
Still is. That personality, it's just off the charts. There's nobody like him. And for me, like a lot of those old, South kind of managers, like, they had the gift of gab. Like, there was Jim Cornette's... Who else?
From the South?
Yeah.
Jimmy Hart, slick. They got that Southern slang, that twang to him. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Those guys were...
They were the best managers, in my opinion.
Anybody with a mouthpiece, even. Like, forget about the Southern aspect of it. Managers back then had a mouthpiece. Paul Erling did. Even J.J. Dillon did. Technically wasn't their manager. He was their advisor, but we all know that.
Yeah. Well,
right? We all know later on in life that wasn't the truth. But the guys like Bobby Heenan, obviously... the Grand Wizard, go back to his day. He was like one of the best, you know, trash talkers of all time.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Those guys can go. Oliver Humperdinck. You know, those guys talked. You know? It's a lost art.
Yeah, it's a shame that, it is a lost art, as you said, because a lot of guys nowadays need it.
Right. So they win by count out, and then they get the Legion of Doom in the next round. So,
oh, God.
Which we'll get to that. Now they break. Now on the videotape, there was two non-tournament matches. On April the 10th, they had Ole Anderson defeating Big Bubba in a steel cage. Mm. I love, you know me, I'm a gimmick match guy anyway.
So am I. When I was a kid, like, the epitome, like, of, you know, like, the ultimate match was always the cage match.
Right.
Because as you discussed in the past, you know, it was the feud would blow off in the cage. And, you know, just as a kid, you know, just seeing whether it was like the WWF blue steel cage or the NWA fence cage, it was just like, okay, these two guys were going to get the shit kicked out of them. There was going to be blood, hopefully.
Yeah, and of course, it was Ole Anderson, part of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew and the Four Horsemen, defeating Big Bubba Ray Trailer, who was the bodyguard of Cornette and the Midnight Express.
But one of the things I found interesting about this cage match was, you know, typically with NWA, you know, it was either pin or submission. You know, they didn't have any, you know, going out of the cage or walking through the door. But this time they switched it up. This time it was like Texas Deathmatch rules.
Yeah.
10 count.
Yep.
So whoever, well, obviously it was Ole Anderson. I think he hit him with the pile driver.
Yeah, he took him by his belt strap.
The old school pulling the pants.
Yes! Dude, that was so good. Tommy Young, your referee. Tommy Young, one of the best referees ever. Refereed thousands upon thousands of championship matches. A couple of referees in this card that I'll point out to you as we go down the card. Tommy Young was the best ref ever. Ole hits the big pile driver for the win. And I mean, like, you could, like, he didn't pick the guy up by his waist. Bubba didn't pick his legs up to help the pile driver. He took him by his belt straps and dropped them on his head.
Because granted, you know, a lot of people could say, well, you know, he used, like, his freaking, you know, belt strap to pull him up. But still, this is like a 300-plus pound man.
Yeah, he's my size, dude. He's 300-plus. Well, he's got to be at least 360. I'm a little lighter than that, but...
Yeah.
Ray Trail was always a big dude. He could move for his size, man.
Absolutely,
Big Bubba Rogers, so... That was a good match. I enjoyed that match a lot. I forgot the match was on there. And now they break away from the tournament and the matches, and they give a special three-match tribute to Magnum T.A.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know who Magnum T.A. is, then you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. I'll give you...
Or actually, you should be listening to this podcast.
Well, you should. Well, you should be. If you're new to old school wrestling, you might want to look up Magnum T.A., Magnum Terry Allen. Magnum T.A. was supposed to be the NWA's version of Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
That's the best way I could describe it.
Put into a Magnum P.I., like, Southern mullet, mustache.
Motorcycle driving, stars and bars.
Yeah.
Full, loaded to the balls kind of guy.
No Hawaiian shirt, though, but regardless.
Listen, you can't have everything, friend.
Yeah.
But Magnum T.A. got into a serious car wreck right before this, almost a year before this. I believe it was a Porsche. I'm not sure. I believe it was... Mm-hmm. The bad car accident wrecked him... Just broke his back. I think his lower back was dismantled at this point. He managed to come back and have a decent run. In these three matches, he was the U.S. champion at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, first was a cage match, with then heel Wahoo McDaniel.
Yeah, which was kind of strange because usually the Native American wrestlers were always face.
They mentioned his heel turn, like, vividly. I remember, like, when I was watching the video, I remember them mentioning it when I first started watching. I don't remember how he became a heel, but it was weird seeing Wahoo as a heel. Only because, again, like you said, the Native American guys were always a proud, hey, how are you, and what's going on, and, you know. Wahoo McDaniel, if you don't know, was a huge star in the late 70s and early 80s. Former linebacker of the New York Jets, too.
Yeah, I think he gave Flair his first U.S. title win.
He did, and that was a good match. Both guys can. Magnum T.A. was a talent.
Yeah,
they were putting all their money. They were grooming him to be the champ.
He was next in line.
He was, and like this was.
If he didn't have this accident, you know, Ronnie Garvin would not be world heavyweight champion.
I'll go on record and saying that if it wasn't for him getting into the accident, Lex Luger would be an absolute job guy at one point.
Mm.
Lex Luger was okay. He wasn't that good. We talked about Luger briefly in the last podcast.
Luger was never.
But really no, but, good, but think about it though. If Magnum TA stayed, you know, he didn't get injured. Him and Flair could have swapped that belt three times.
Yeah.
So if you swap in a belt three times, that's at least a year and a half, 2 years of Luger not being a face, then turning.
Yeah.
Then Barry Windham with the whole the Horseman turn, him being a face after this, fighting him at the Great American Bash in Baltimore. That whole thing. You wouldn't have any of that.
The career of Lex Luger could have been non-existent.
Think about it, though, dude. If you look at this match, look at this card, look at the last three, look at 86 to 88 of the National Wrestling Alliance. If if that didn't happen, you're looking at a long tenure. And Flair made guys look good, whether they were good or bad.
Yeah.
Regardless. Like, I mean, and then he started fighting guys that were not even, like, tag team. He would fight all tag team guys. He fought Ricky Morton. He fought
Hawk.
He fought Scott Steiner, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's move on. And then he fought, in the second match of this tribute, he fights Kamala with both feet at this time. Kamala had both feet, by the way.
You act like there was a point in time where he was wrestling without feet.
Looked like it. You know? And the final match of the three. Do you want to talk about the Kamala match? Do you care? I don't care. I don't think. You have any notes about Kamala? I didn't take any notes about Kamala or Wahoo, except for Wahoo's.
Yeah, I didn't actually. I actually did not take any notes on Kamala. I watched it, but I did not put any.
The next match could be a whole podcast.
The I Quit match.
Steel Cage. Yeah, it's been on almost every tribute tape, DVD that WWE's done with.
Yeah.
Multiple with cage matches and stuff like that. I have this match now on three different DVDs.
I'm not surprised.
The infamous I Quit match versus Tully Blanchard for the United States title. One of my favorites of all time. As Dave just said, one of his favorites.
Absolutely.
At one point, Magnum TA shoving the mic in Tully's face. And him screaming, no, no, no.
Well, he's shoving like a jagged.
But before that.
Oh.
Though, this was.
Oh, yeah, you're right,
They just got. They just started juicing. Magnum's got the mic and he's shoving, like, come on, come on. Like, no, no. And he's screaming, no. Baby Doll's like all like, freaking out.
I gotta say, when I saw this match for the first time, I don't know how old I was. I had to be 8, 9, or 10, you know, somewhere in that range. And to be watching this kind of footage, you know, compared to WWF, which is like sleek, you know, beautiful presented, you know, television show.
Production way better, yes.
And then getting this, what was it? It was on WCW Greatest Grudges VHS. And watching this like gritty, raw looking footage that by no means could, you know, be shown on television at any point in time. And just seeing these two guys who I'd never heard of before. I think even for Tully Blanchard, you know, he was in the Brainbusters, like I may have known him just from that.
Just from that, yeah.
But watching this match and just seeing these guys, you know, literally, like, fight the way that they did, I was terrified watching this. And especially especially moments where, like you were saying, like, he was shoving the microphone into his mouth, screaming. Like, I had never heard, like, another, like, a grown man like that scream. So I was, like, scared. And then the way that it ended with, like, the freaking jagged edge of a chair.
Right, so Tully regains momentum, and he beats Magnum to a bloody mess with the same microphone, trying to make him submit, or quit, I should say. Magnum, of course, no. Magnum wasn't as vocal as Tully was. Let me tell you something. And the heel wrestlers in this day sold it.
Yeah, they were loud.
Right. Anything. I'm talking like
Flair.
Sold it. Blood. Guts. People hated you.
Yeah.
Like when Flair mentioned in his article about inciting stadium riots, that was no joke.
Yeah.
I want to do a podcast about some of the feuds that incited riots like that, like the Horsemen and Dusty, the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, where they had to get like police escorted, you know.
And for your friend Bruiser Brody and Abdullah the Butcher in Puerto Rico.
It's another match that's. I mean, I remember Dutch Mantel saying that in one of his podcasts that he was interviewed in Puerto Rico. You had to get escorted if you were a bad guy because they'll stab you. They'll kill you. That's how seriously they took it.
Yeah.
So they sold it. Tully at this point breaks a wooden chair. Now when he breaks the chair, Tony Schiavone says, what's Tully Blanchard going to do with this now? I personally don't think that was in the match. I don't think they sat there and said, I'm going to break this chair and embed it in your head. I'm going to break the chair and make over your head and make you quit. I think he threw the chair down. The chair, this is my opinion. I wish I could meet these guys and ask them.
Yeah.
I don't think he meant to take a piece. Well, let me say this first. He breaks the wooden chair, starts digging it into Magnum's face. Literally. I don't think that was supposed to happen. I think he was supposed to break the chair over his head or whatever, like those chairs normally did back then.
Yeah.
And get into it that way. Magnum then, losing all his blood, I don't know how he does it, reverses it, digs into Tully's head, and makes Tully quit.
Absolute savage brutality. I love it.
Best match on the card. Probably the best match in those 2 days that they had outside of the Road Warriors and the Midnight Express. We'll get into that in a few minutes. But
no, that match wasn't a part of the the tournament. That was just
the quarterfinals?
No, that was just like a little retrospective that they had on Magnum TA.
Right.
Because this...
I'm sorry. Yeah, so the best match on the tape, I should say. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
The best match on the tape, yeah, in terms of the Midnight Express.
Because for this event, for the finals, which
right,
we'll be getting into.
Right, the quarterfinals. So, yes. I'm sorry. It was the best, probably the best match on the tape.
Regardless of...
Well, the Flair window match was good, too, but we'll get into that in a second. Quarterfinals, LOD lose to the Midnight Express. Every time these guys faced off, it was great.
Yeah.
Cornette, well, you have any notes before I get into this, or do you want to, how you want to set this up? I took some notes on it, a little bit anyway. Cornette throwing a fireball in Animal's face.
Another classic wrestling ending.
This didn't involve a sleeper, but...
No sleeper involved, but there was a racket and a DQ.
Precious Paul only hits Cornette with a tennis racket and hard.
Yeah.
He sold it. It was like, it wasn't like a thing where I tapped you or it hurt.
Yeah.
It hurt.
You heard it.
Poor Hawk, they go outside the ring. Hawk beats up on poor Randy Anderson, who's got to be 130 pounds at this point, outside the ring. Good, they always fought. Yeah. I remember when the Road Warriors turned on Dusty, they were bad guys at this point. Super heels, the Spike. The Midnight Express were actually the World Tag Team Champions at that point. They had beaten the Horsemen. And the Road Warriors jumped them on TV and beat them to a bloody mess. Where in TBS, they had to block it out at that point.
Wow. The Big X.
Yeah, anytime these teams fought, it was good. The Skyscrapers match. We can get into that, too. We have a whole bunch of podcasts to plan now.
Oh, my God.
It's going to be great. Then the next match was the Superpowers, which is Nikita Koloff and Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes was the booker at this point. He was the promoter. He was the creator of all these matches and state tournaments and stuff like that.
Yeah, the brain trust of the NWA.
Right. And then, of course, they fought Manny Fernandez and Ravishing Rick Rude.
The then World Tag Team Champions.
Yes.
The top seed.
The top seed in the tournament. Now... Manny Fernandez and Rick Rude. Rick Rude had just come off a... Teddy Long, your referee, by the way. Manny Fernandez was a raging bull. Straight up raging bull. He was an animal. Rude was in his prime at this point, coming from world class.
Yeah.
Paul Jones, very underrated manager. Another good talker.
Yeah, he's one of those kind of guys that just kind of gets, you know... Especially for this time, you had the best of the best. Managers, wrestlers, everybody. So, you know, occasionally some guys get... You know, pushed to the wayside. Unfortunately, Paul Jones is one of them.
Yeah, and Paul Jones always had decent guys in his stable. You know, always.
Yeah.
Powers of Pain, you know, the Russians. He had, he had these guys. I believe he had the Missing Link.
Missing Link was in NWA for a bit.
Yeah, a lot of guys were, though. Again, guys like Kamala, Missing Link, those guys, Rick Rude, Manny Fernandez, they were... Territory swapping at that point. Yeah. It was in a tight, man. It was fantastic. Yeah. It was a good time to be a wrestling fan. So Rick Rude throws two big knees from the top rope on Dusty.
Huh.
Right? Rude was great, man. I loved Rick Rude. Paul Jones joins in on their beatdown. Manny Fernandez goes for a big flying body press, and then Dusty Rhodes reverses the momentum and gets the pin.
Another classic tag team ending.
as Nikita Koloff selling the injury to his neck with the neck brace works over Rick Rude. And
oh, yeah.
Dusty gets the pin, the reversal at this point. They're so over at this point, too, Nikita Koloff and Dusty Rhodes.
Oh, my God. Nikita Koloff, the U.S. champion, and Dusty Rhodes. I'm pretty sure he had, didn't he have, like, an upcoming NWA title reign around that point? 87?
That was the last of his reign. He was six-man champ after that.
I thought he had, like, one more world title reign where he'd be Flair in the cage. Was that 87 or?
No, he fought Ronnie Garvin in 87. And then after that was Luger in 88, Sting.
Yeah, but Garvin, that was like maybe about like a month long or something like that.
Yeah, no, I don't think he had another belt after that. I'll have to look that up. But yeah. I might be wrong, but I think I'm pretty accurate. I think it's Dusty was on the tail end of that. He was doing a lot of behind-the-scenes shit, and then he did the he was a six-man tag with the Road Warriors sitting up for that heel turn. So.
Oh, yeah. And plus, if you watch a lot of these videos, even like the TV show, you would see, like, as far as the credits, like, it would say executive producer, Virgil Runnels.
Virgil Runnels, yeah. That's when WCW took over and turned him into a better product on TV.
He was a busy boy.
Right. So the Armstrongs are still in the tournament. They lose to Luger and Tully. And
I have a little gripe with the ending of this match.
All right. So how it goes was Tully and J.J. Dillon double clothesline bullet Bob for the win.
A double clothesline. Like, granted, you know, there's plenty of guys who have the clothesline as a finisher at this point. But it was just like another one of those kind of like, for me, those cheap tag team endings. And like, you know, say Luger and Blanchard gave him the double clothesline. I'm pretty sure he would kick out of that. But with J.J. Dillon and Blanchard providing that arsenal, for some reason that knocks out Bullet Bob.
I think at that point it was like, all right, guys, keep us in the 10 minutes.
Yeah.
We have a long night ahead of us, you know. The Superpowers defeat the Midnight Express in the semis, advancing to the finals.
Yeah.
Nothing really stands out in this match.
For me.
For you, though.
The thing that stood out was finally, like, a win with a finisher.
Yes.
That was the Russian Sickle.
The Sickle, yes.
On to Eaton for the win.
Yes, hits Bobby Eaton with the Russian Sickle for the win. Nikita, again, totally selling the neck injury. So,
yeah,
they're going to fight in the finals now against Luger and Blanchard. So now your next match goes a half an hour, at least. Ric Flair defeating Barry Windham to retain the NWA World Heavyweight Championship.
Amazing match.
Yeah, fantastic match. Windham goes on record to say that this is one of his best matches of all time. He talks about it on Ric Flair's DVD. He talks about it on a couple of interviews that I read.
It really, like, the storytelling in that match is just phenomenal. Like, the back and forth, like, even the false finish with Flair's foot on the rope. After the three count, there's the possible dusty finish. But then the match goes on.
Right. Windham, a lot of sleeper holds on his tape.
Yeah, but luckily they didn't lead to some sort of foreign object.
About 20 minutes in, Windham hits a sleeper. Flair breaks it. The match continues again, like you said, nonstop, back and forth, awesomeness. Yeah. I wrote down my notes, back and forth, nonstop, awesomeness, which it was for about 25 minutes.
Like this was like the kind of match like you just wanted to see all the time. Like you didn't know who the hell was going to win. Kind of like what you were talking about with the Luger match.
Yeah.
Like, it was just kind of like, people wanted to see Barry Windham win that world title, and
And it was so good, like you said, it told a really good story, made you believe that he could win the title. And point in case, this is, Windham throws this huge suplex after a few near pinfalls. There was a, off the top rope, there was a back and forth, he gets a couple of near pins, gets a huge suplex, Flair rolls him up, and then pulls the trunks. Dirtiest player in the game for the win, you know?
There's another notch on Ric Flair's belt.
Again, it's like poetry,
yeah.
Dave. You don't see this shit on television no more, man.
Yeah.
It's sad news, and I'm glad I can do a podcast about it.
Yeah, I wonder if that was the belt that he sold to two different people at the same time.
The $50,000 belt.
Yeah.
I'm coming up, and I'm bringing the belt with me, he says. All right, so your finals, obviously, the Superpowers defeating Luger and Blanchett to win the tournament. Your referee in this match is the awesome Earl Hebner.
You know,
brother of Dave.
Yeah, and Rhodes wins it with another crossbody.
Yep.
Didn't reverse it this time, but...
Yeah, at this point, you got JJ is choking Nikita with the neck brace outside of the ring. A lot of double teaming on the outside on Nikita Koloff, keeping Dusty at bay. Dusty finally makes it back, only to be knocked outside, worked over by the horseman. Tully and JJ botch a double team on Nikita as Big Dust comes off the rope for the win. So, the body press.
Yeah. And that's it. Magnum TA at ringside for the emotional ending.
We did it for Magnum.
Yeah.
That was the big article in Pro Wrestling Illustrated of them holding the trophy. We did it for Magnum.
And the cherry on top, Jim Crockett's wife pronounces Nikita Koloff's last name Nikita Khrushchev.
Nikita Khrushchev. Not as bad as my botches, but...
For $1 million.
The kayfabe $1 million contract. The Pro Wrestling Illustrated was... that article was fantastic because it holding a little trophy. We did it for Magnum. We did it for Magnum. You know, yeah. It was so good. It was well done. And I was listening to the Wizards this morning on the way to my appointment, and I got to thinking, and I'm glad we're doing this today because it's still fresh in my head. So I don't forget it. How they were talking to Tugboat, and he was talking about the territories and him being in Florida. And I'm not going to get into the interview, but...
You can listen to their show on the Shining Wizards Network.
That's right. That's right, David. You can go there. It's, what is it, swn.shiningwizards.com. That's where you'll find us and six other wonderful shows right now at the moment. I think the territory thing could still work.
I'm actually going to quote the angry wrestling vet on Facebook. Who says, pretty much nowadays, you know, it more or less is the territories again these days with the independents. But, you know, there's not like one governing body. Like
that's my point. This is my vision. If I had money and resources, which I don't have any. But I would take a governing body like the NWA. Because the new NWA owners are terrible.
Yeah.
If they're going, they're destroying that lineage. Fucking terrible, and that's the first time I swore like
and,
that.
And they're the current NWA World Champion, Rob Conway.
Yeah,
the fucking con man
from
WWE.
Right.
One half the forgotten half of La Resistance is the world champion. Not to discredit the guy. You know, I've seen some of his stuff as NWA champion. It's okay, but he's like defending the belt. He's actually defending the belt this Saturday in Japan for New Japan Pro Wrestling. But still, this is a company that's, you know, operating out of high school gyms. They're not even close to, you know, like a Chikara or a Ring of Honor or Beyond Wrestling. They're not even at their level. Like, they're just hopping onto other people's shows.
Right. Again, I would take a governing body and pick out certain promotions from different regions and sanction them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, listen, no disrespect to PWS. It's a nice product. You and I have been there. We've called matches for them. Right. Again, my whole thing is they shove 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll give you a 4-hour show or like 2 hours of legend signings. Then you don't start the card till 9 o'clock, and then you're there for 5 hours.
You're there for almost like a whole day.
Unless you're a wrestling fanatic promoter or just bored out of your mind, or all three, there is absolutely no way I'm going to be at a wrestling show for 5 hours with my wife and my son. If it's you and I got no problem with that.
Yeah.
If it's us, they don't have the attention span to sit there, like, you know. Like, WrestleMania was rough because, again, it was like 4 hours. You know. So, again, this is what I would do. Seriously, I would take every region, like it back in the day. Of course, WWE is the exception now because they have their own breeding grounds and shit like that. But I would take promotions from different areas. I would take Pro Wrestling Guerrilla.
Mm-hmm.
I would take something from the Pacific Northwest, Midwest, Mid-South, North, Southwest, Southeast. And I would make them a governing body. And then you could start territory swapping. This way, you know, even with this day and age with internet and NWA, like, on fire and all these little promotions everywhere, you know, like, stuff like that, you know? I would do that. I would... There's enough talent now. Everybody's got a school.
Yeah.
Like Eddie said today, Eddie was talking about today. Eddie was like, Shining Wizards Eddie. He was like, you know what? Back in the day, it was like a secret to go to wrestling school.
Yeah.
Like, you had to be like, oh, I don't know where to go. Where's the schools? Now?
Yeah.
There's a school in every town.
Yeah. I could start a school and people would...
But every town, every city has a school, you know? So now it's like not far-fetched to do that. You know, case in point, I would, that's what I would do, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough call because I really don't know, you know, I can't speak for the promoters that are, you know, operating now, you know, would a Ring of Honor want to be a part of, you know, some sort of governing body? Would a PWG, well, Chikara, they're, as far as I can tell, they're kayfabing that they're...
They're kayfabing, they're done, yeah.
That they're done, yeah. But, you know, who's to say, you know, pro wrestling, just like any form of entertainment... Is ego driven,
right? And all it takes is a couple of networks to say, "Hey, listen, if you do A, B, and C, I can guarantee you TV time. I could, you know, that's the thing. Like we talk about, like with TNA,
yeah,
like TNA's got phenomenal talent. I feel if they were on a different network with proper promotion and proper production,
mm-hmm.
I think they could be as big TV wise,
yeah,
as WWE."
Well, they only recently started touring right now, so but I can't say for sure if touring's the answer. You know, for every kind of organization, it's always word of mouth. And this is just like a really strange time in wrestling. Wrestling, just people just don't give a shit about wrestling right now.
And like, the fan base is like, these crowds are terrible.
Yeah.
Like, the last couple of shows on Raw were, like, phenomenal because of the crowds. But you don't get that no more, man.
No.
I remember going to cards and like the necks on your the hair neck would be like all over the place. Like you would chills. Like it's a regular house show.
Yeah.
But the fans made you believe that this was the greatest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah. People would still get up on their feet and you know just go crazy. Now it's just kind of like people are just sitting back and you know you're lucky if you get an international crowd coming in that could actually you know rile up everybody.
Exactly.
There you go.
So that's how I would fix some of the crap that's going on now, and I know you don't watch a lot of the current crap, so
no.
I'm not gonna bore you with that and
please don't
give our fans the unjust.
This is a Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
This is a Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. This was episode 29. Now
get that new stuff out of here.
Yeah, let's get the new stuff out of here. Episode 30 will be probably in a week, 2 weeks. Yeah,
July 3rd
is going to be my one-year anniversary
Mark
show.
Mark your calendar.
Live from the bunker. I want to thank my buddy Joe for that. We're going to have the Shining Wizards in studio. We're going to have my buddy Rich, who is a huge collector of wrestling figures. He's sending us couple of his autographed figures to give away as prizes.
Oh, nice.
Taking a couple of calls from other shows and fans of the show.
Going live.
We'll be your first. Yeah, we're going to do a live show. With the Ustream, probably, or maybe I'll do another outlet for that, and then we'll do a fun show. It should be a good time, and I think we're gonna do.
It's 12 months in the making.
12 months in the making, and the War Games DVD is coming out on the 25th. So what I want to do is I want to talk to you and the guys about some of our favorite War Games matches. Now I already have them all. So I'll upload them or get them to you, whatever it is. But, you know, we're going to have to start looking up some stuff. And we're going to do the War Games. That's going to be
the Match Beyond.
The Match Beyond. Arguably my favorite time in pro wrestling next to the Royal Rumbles.
Awesome.
And there have been some awesome War Games.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, just right off the top of my head and right onto Brian Pillman's head, the powerbomb.
The powerbomb from Sid. Yep, we'll talk about that. And I'm sure the Shining Wizards are going to talk about that. I don't know if all three are going to be in. It's a work thing.
Yeah.
Either way, though, it's going to be a good time. And it's going to be fun. What's going on with you and hitting rock bottom?
Well, that's... They're just still trying to figure out how to, you know, market it and all that kind of stuff. This is the... unfortunately, like, the hardest part of any sort of these, you know, kind of like... independent projects, just finding it, you know, how to continue funding it and how to just market it so people, you know, jump on board. So brain thruster are working hard day and night. Figure that out.
All right, cool. So, of course, this has been the Turnbuckle Throwback Wrestling Podcast. You can reach us on Stitcher and iTunes, on the brand new Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. Yes. You can tweet the show at TBuckleTBacks, and your Twitter is?
And the Mr. Powers.
The Mr. Powers. Give Dave and I a tweet. What are your favorite matches? What are some of your favorite War Games matches? What were some of your great NWA moments? How would you fix the territories? Let us know. Email the show at turnbucklethrowbacks1@gmail.com. And again, expect a big show on July the 3rd, Wednesday evening. I will be posting the details in about a week or so.
With the new generation of sports entertainment journalists.
It's the new symbolized excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting.
I'm going to go with the new generation because I hated the new generation so much. So, you know, why not give it a it's just due with us.
All right. Well, Tony, if you're listening, we are the new generation of sports entertainment broadcasting. I will take a quick break. Dave, thank you so much for coming through to the Decadome. I will see you next episode, and I'm going to take
July 3rd. Mark your calendars.
Mark your freaking calendars there, jerkies.
Don't you dare miss it.
Don't miss it at all. And I'll be back with some cheap plugs and maybe a song of the week. See you later.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
All right, so that was episode 29 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. I just want to thank Dave again for coming through. Dave's going to be our new co-host. Right now, every 2 weeks, unless something entices us to do something different. But right now, big show coming up July 3rd. Shining Wizards will be in studio with Dave and I at the Bunker. We're doing a big War Games show. And just like a round table of us shooting the shit, talking about wrestling. Speaking of Shining Wizards, the brand new network is up, guys. Please check it out. It's fantastic. SWN.ShiningWizards.com. And, of course, go to ShiningWizards.com.
Be a mark, buy the shirt.
That's right, Mike. Be a mark, buy the shirt, buy a box of wizardry. Network lineup, of course, Justin Credible's Wrestling, Pro Wrestling 101. Us, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We've got Netbreaker Podcast, The Midnight Jury, The Fallen Angels, and, of course, 3.5 Wrestlers Podcast. A big network of guys coming through. This is going to be insane. Always support them. RadioInfluence.com, Will and Phil Wolfe Podcast, Tattoos and Touchdowns, Chris and Will. Every Tuesday, live, 9 to 10. Man Cave Radio, MoreLikeRadio.com. That's me and Big JP every Sunday from 8 to 10, exclusively on MoreLikeRadio.com. WrestlingSoup.com, Mission Joey, shout out to them every Thursday. Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle every Monday, 11:15. Wrestling-News.com, Women Who Love Wrestling, too. There's so many podcasts out there, so many shows, support them. Uncle Eddie Ham Radio, 9 to 1 every Tuesday at MoreLikeRadio.com. Check us out, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. Shining Wizards Network, swn.shiningwizards.com. That, guys, again, David, I want to thank you so much for having us on. Shiningwizards.com.
Be a mark, buy the shirt.
Buy the shirt. I have a shirt. You have a shirt?
Yeah.
What color do you have?
Blue.
Blue. You got that for your birthday, right?
Yeah.
What do you want to say to those guys?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having us. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Big War Games show. What was your favorite War Games match? I have a whole bunch. So let us know how you feel. Again, guys, support your local podcast. Support your local radio show, internet radio show. We're on a ground level of something really big. That's going to do it for me. Have a great rest of your weekend. Take care of yourselves and each other. And I am out. Peace and chicken grease. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.